live in perilous times. Trump is president, and if he gets his way, we'll have a new Supreme Court justice who will roll back our rights. As much as you'd like to say, I'm moving to Norway, the reality is we're all stuck here together.
Today, therapist and relationship expert Damon L. Jacobs joins us to take a look at the political crisis that's pulling the rug out from under us, and what we can all do to stick together and survive President 45.
Plus, Oklahoma says okay to medical marijuana, and Vermont says hell yeah to recreational pot.
And Russian bots are after Bette Midler.
I'm Fausto Fernos.
I'm Mark Fillion.
And this is Feast of Fun. Our guest today is family therapist, relationship expert Damon L. Jacobs, to take a look at the political crisis that's pulling the rug under from us and what we all can do to stick together and survive President number 45.
Hello.
Welcome back.
Welcome back. It's Chair so good to Fanatic. See both. Chair Fanatic. It's great to see both, Mark. I'm so glad to have you back on the show.
I'm glad to be here.
We
I'm
missed
very
you.
Happy to be here. Thank you.
Yes.
It's funny, yesterday's show, we talked about Cher and the Cher show, and now we're talking about her number one enemy.
Trump.
The person that she tweets against the most.
Trump is really, the enemy is the Republican Party. And ultimately, I think it's a disinformation campaign led by the Sinclair Group and Fox News. And this whole idea that's sort of been slowly bubbling over the course of my entire life, that education is elitist, that knowledge is for snobs. And your desire to learn things, your desire to read and write and speak eloquently is suspect. And that ultimately it's being stupid is smart. So we live in a really difficult time right now. You know, I even hear this from other people. And you see this in sort of a, you know, liberal / conservative video viral messages on Facebook that are owned by very conservative companies that are saying, like, people should be allowed to talk any way they want to because that otherwise it's racist. And I'm like, you know, in the history of education, it was considered a crime to teach a black person how to read. And here in 2018, now we've sort of gotten into the political world where learning to read and to write and to learn and to educate yourself is something really, really suspect. And it's distressful because I think behind a lot of these Trump supporters, behind a lot of these Republicans, are people who are not self-actualized. There are people like my cousin who's from Puerto Rico. And he's somebody who has moved to the United States and become a staunch Republican Trump supporter, even though he lives at a near poverty level. He drives an Uber car most of the time. And this is stemming from the lack of education and his frustration with human relationships. He doesn't have a girlfriend. He's lonely. He's lost. And so the Republican Party and these racists who see him as an outsider don't even see him as a person.
But they speak to him.
They speak to him. They are reaching out to people like him, and they're saying, you know, guys who feel, you know, I deal with this all the time. It's like, I'm not stupid. I know what's going on. You know, and this really angry, belligerent feeling that when somebody tries to gently explain to you why something is the way it is, that they get on the defensive. And so
what do you think that anger is about?
Well, I mean, it's part of the human condition. I think, you know, they've done studies that when you don't know about something, there's this idea that the people, when they studied human vaccinations, and they were looking at people who knew a little bit about that human vaccinations and you know, this idea that vaccinations are tied to autism when they're not, right? So they were trying to understand why this idea that vaccinations were tied to autism, how this was growing. And what the researchers found is that when people knew very little about something, they didn't want to admit they did. They felt that they asked people about a broad range of topics that they felt they were familiar with, and consistently people said they were about 60%, sort of a little bit above the middle, on what they knew about something. No one feels comfortable saying the words, "I don't know. Let's find out together."
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So it's a very revolutionary thing to say to somebody, "I don't know the answer to these things, but we can work together to find out a solution." And ultimately, I think that's where how we get, you know, you position this idea to us, surviving 45 and the Republic and all this stuff. And I think at the core of all this is stick together, which is a theme of Mark's reality TV show, right? The group stick together, and together we can overcome anything. We have to, and when we don't know something, admit you don't know something, and research and learn and find a solution.
And it's okay to not know. I don't know why people, why do people feel so vulnerable not knowing about things sometimes? Why do they feel like they have to bluff through it?
Well, I think, okay, so here's what I'm seeing happening, and there's an excessive amount of fear. Maybe that's the same fear we've always had, but it sure seems to be out there more on both sides, the left and the right. And part of that fear is often maintaining a persona, a certain kind of confidence, because if you say you don't know, and I agree with you, Vasta, I think that's sometimes the most empowering and strong things that we can say is, "I don't know, and I'm willing to learn." But when, I mean, imagine we don't really live in a culture that rewards us or encourages us to say, "I don't know," or "I'm not sure." If you think about, we talk about Drag Race all the time. And, you know, on a show like Drag Race or in a culture like that, you have to be able to sound like you know what you're saying, and you have to have an opinion, and you have to be able to defend that opinion when you're attacked by other people. And there's very little leeway there for one to be vulnerable and teachable and curious about learning new things if they're being persecuted or judged.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying Drag Race is the downfall of our civilization, but I'm saying that there's a lot of public posturing and puffing that doesn't lend itself well to learning and teaching.
Sure. And that's part of your like list. You put together a list of how to survive 45, and one of them that I thought was very probably should be on the top of this list is people are confusing activism with attackivism.
Yeah. So what I am seeing, and this is... most of my social media are people who are liberals and on the left, because that's who I am.
I hate describing people as this, like, binary, liberal and progressive, because I think that's part of, you know, Republican strategy to pit us against each other.
Well, I agree with you, because I think we have more in common than we don't.
Yeah,
I'm thinking that's kind of how they would see themselves. Mm-hmm. And I see a lot of what people are doing on in all social media forums, instead of looking for common ground, instead of saying, "I don't know and I want to learn something," is finding ways to poke holes or push or attack other people and saying that I'm being an activist if I'm telling other people they're wrong. Mm-hmm. You're wrong because you're bad. You're wrong because I disagree with you. Someone makes a mistake out of hand and they get labeled as racist or misogynistic or homophobic or transphobic. And oftentimes that's not honestly what's in their heart, but they don't always know the language or understand or have the education to be able to use a certain kind of language that would convey the compassion that is true to their souls. And instead of being helped with that, they're condemned and attacked and told they're wrong and they're bad and they're evil and they're homophobic and transphobic, etc. That doesn't help us. That's not going to get us to a place in our lives that's about more love, about more compassion. And I want to say I was sharing this list with the two of you because I know people are really scared right now. I know with the news with the Supreme Court people, I mean, this is it. This is kind of what we were afraid of a year and a half ago.
It's here,
right? It's like Trump we're going to be dealing with this.
Justice Kennedy to quit.
Yes.
To retire so he can appoint a Supreme Court justice while he's being investigated that will allow him to pardon himself.
Yes, that's the bad news. The good news is that if we think about this historically, if we think about this philosophically, there are many other times in history, there's many other times in different civilizations where people have struggled with similar issues, similar fears, and often written and documented how they have gotten through that with a semblance of peace, with a semblance of compassion and humanity.
Can you give me an example?
Right.
Of that?
So this is something
I'm really curious to know which, like, because you always hear people.
Like Anne Frank?
No, I'm thinking more of
like Rome burning. I always one thing that I'm always hearing is comparing United States to Rome in its final days.
Okay, so I'm thinking.
And so I'm curious to hear a comparison to somebody who triumphed, somebody who survived.
So one of them is named Viktor Frankl. And he is a psychologist that came up with a field of logotherapy, which isn't really talked to that much about anymore, but this was kind of happening in the 60s. Viktor Frankl was the survivor of Auschwitz, and his entire family was exterminated in the concentration camps, in the Nazi concentration camps. And
He
lost everything. He wrote a book called Man's Search for Meaning, which I highly recommend. Anyone who's scared today, get Man's Search for Meaning. It's like a penny on the eBay or sorry, Amazon. And his primary thesis, which is what I've used in most of my career, is that we are not the last of human freedoms is the ability to choose one's attitude in any set of circumstances. Let me say that again. The last of human freedoms is the ability to choose one's attitude in any set of circumstances. Mm-hmm. And he based on his experiences in Auschwitz. Losing his family, losing his friends, seeing people die around him. His premise was that they can take anything from me. They can take my health. They can take my body. They can take my freedom. They can't take my mind unless I give that to them. And that's the one thing I will not give to them is my peace of mind, is my ability to recognize that my life is meaningful. My life is purpose-filled. My life has relevance. That there's something going on here. There's a reason why all this is happening. No one can take that away from me unless I give it to them. That was the premise of Man's Search for Meaning.
But certainly that's an attempt right now. I think, you know, part of the Republican strategy right now and, you know, is to undermine people's minds.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah, and that's like this 24-hour news cycle, and it's always constantly, it's just this barrage of, you know, stuff coming from the White House that is just garbage, and it just consumes people's minds.
But when people use that to attack one another, mm-hmm. whether it's in personal relationships or in social media, we don't need Fox. Like, Fox News knows that they don't need to be there and monitor all this, because all you have to do is give people who identify on the left, you give them enough material, and they're going to attack each other. And they're going to rip each other limb to limb. This is what I'm concerned about, what I'm seeing so much in social media. This is why I really don't use Facebook anymore, except for my group, Prep Facts, Rethinking HIV mm-hmm. Prevention and Sex, and then the other one that I have about smoking cessation. I use Facebook to teach and to try to help people feel empowered about their lives. I'm really not in the news feed anymore, because most of what I'm seeing is just people attacking each other, telling them why they're wrong. And mm-hmm. again, these are people who describe themselves as lefts or people who are not on the right. Mm-hmm. They might describe themselves as libertarian, but they don't see themselves as conservative Trumpers. But they're using those same mechanisms to attack each other. Right? And that is where I think our empowerment will always live. And Viktor Frankl is not the only person who has said this. Abraham Lincoln documented that a person is only as upset as they make up their mind to be. Because depressed was not the word they used mm-hmm. in that time. Tina Turner documented this brilliantly in her book, I, Tina, in a very similar way. She didn't use the same words. But she described what it was like in the midst of a cycle of sexual, physical, emotional abuse in her marriage. That was really an extension of what had happened in her family of origin, to mm-hmm. find within herself the energy and the spirit to say, wait a second, there is more to me than this. Whatever he does to me, whatever he takes from me, my body, my mind, my spirit is a beautiful, loving light and energy. And no one can diminish that unless I allow them to diminish that. And she talks about chanting.
You know, I wish every Namorangi Kyo. Yeah. I wish every drag queen that was learned to lip sync to Tina Turner's music would read her memoirs.
I think it's a really relevant message, especially for the times we're living in now, because sure. none of us have to be a victim of what's about to happen in this country. And I'm not living in a rose-colored world. I really do believe that things are pretty dire in our country. But what I'm learning or relearning from all these people who have written about this in the past is that the world cannot be the primary source of our serenity and our joy. And sometimes when I say that to activists, they get very offended by that because they see that as being complacent with the status quo.
Like you're just checking out.
Right. And to me, it is different. To me, that is an extreme form of resistance, is to say, no, my body, my mind, and my spirit will not be tarnished by the Supreme Court nominations. Mm-hmm. There's a lot they can take from us. There's a lot they can do to us. But I keep thinking about Viktor Frankl. I keep thinking about Nelson Mandela because he documented the same ideas in his book, Long Walk to Freedom. Mm-hmm. About how they can do that, and you can still be a full human.
What's the key to being able to do that? How does one do that? It's easy to say, like, okay, just be happy. Don't worry, be happy, but how is it that exactly?
I'm not even talking necessarily about happiness, because I think happiness is kind of a dangerous goal that we get into trouble with.
Okay, so how to have a positive...
How to find the serenity.
How to find your bliss. What is the term you're looking for? Or what is
so I think more about joy.
Okay.
Or at least in addition to serenity. Joy and serenity are these constant states that I have, even though I'm not always necessarily happy. And sometimes I get stressed or I get anxious. Mm-hmm. But serenity and joy are deeper states that I can return to. And I've used all these tools that I've shared with the two of you to do this throughout my life, because I've realized that even when things are politically better, I still need to be working on these tools if I want to feel joyful, if I want to feel serenity.
So how does one feel serenity?
So I made you a list.
You did.
So one of them. So they all really fall into addressing the body, the mind, and the spirit. And I'm also a very, you know, I know Frosto hates the word spiritual, but when I say that, I don't mean like groovy kumbaya. I mean having a sense of perspective of something more happening than just us existing in America in 2018 with this Supreme Court, that there is something more about our existence that's more meaningful than that.
Yeah. There used to be dinosaurs on this planet, and now we're here.
Yeah.
And something's happening.
And things were pretty dire. In the 1950s as well, politically speaking. We came through that time culturally, historically, politically. We kind of took a swing towards what I saw as a more loving place, not perfectly linear in that way.
Sure.
But we saw civil rights. We saw women's rights. We saw gay rights. We've seen transgender rights. We've seen all of these things go in a very certain direction in our lifetime. Now we're facing them going backward. And historically, that's not that unusual for things to go one way and then go backward. And that's not good. I'm just saying that I don't want to give the Supreme Court or number 45 the ability to mess with my spirit. And that's the one thing they will not take from me, no matter what.
I get asked that question a lot, actually, by our listeners. Do I believe in God? You know, and if you look at and I'm like, which religion are you talking about? There are thousands. And, you know, just on Earth, and if you look at Star Trek, if you look at fiction and the idea of religion and God in fiction and in nonfiction, there are an infinite number of ideas of what this is.
Right. And in our minds.
And I kind of answered that question in a really effective way. And ultimately, God is a state of mind. It's an idea that this idea that you're that things are going to get better if you work together as a group of people, this happy feeling you get when you're listening to your favorite music or you're laughing at a joke, is this direction that you can take that you can overcome anything as long as you're part of a community. And to me, that's an idea that's very appealing, and it's certainly something that I work towards having in my everyday life. But the problem is that so many people, when you ask somebody, a politician, for example, do you believe in God? It is a very charged question, because what it really means is, do you align yourself with these established organizations that are harmful to people's desire for community and happiness?
Right. That's the unfortunate
part. And the answer would be no. You know? So it depends on how you look at that question is just as important as how you answer it.
Right. That God has gotten appropriated into some very unloving rhetoric.
We don't even need to call
country.
It God. You
right.
Know?
So this is what I say.
It
whether people
matter.
Call it God or Jesus or Buddha or Allah or Gaga, it's a sense of having a connection to a higher power, whatever word you use, but something that internally gives you that sense of peace, something that can internally help you reach a place of serenity. Which is not the opposite of being active, because you can be active and you can fight the power and you can protest and fight from that place of serenity, from that place of joy. I share for myself that PrepFax group that I started 5 years ago. It was my mission just to get the word out about PrEP, about pre-exposure prophylaxis. But it wasn't coming from this angry, should, you know, disgusted place. There was
the desire to control other people.
It wasn't about controlling other people. I was angry that no one else was doing the work at the time. But it wasn't like, oh, I'm angry and this is what's going to make me feel better. It was like, okay, I'm using
my
anger.
It was like Margaret Cho says, we become the ones we're seeking.
Well, it was about channeling the anger in a way to help people learn, to help people grow, to help people have sexual pleasure. Right. So, Mark, so some of the tools that I've been using, definitely in this administration, but this is not new to 45. I've been practicing these tools for most of the last 20 years now, is that I start every single day with a gratitude list. And that might sound cheesy, but
it sounds really cheesy, but I'm sure it works.
But remember, we live in a culture about attackivism, and everything I say is going to sound cheesy if you use that framework. But where does that framework get you? Mm-hmm. If we stick to a culture of fear and anger and attack, we're going to have people that are psychologically and emotionally and spiritually damaged. And I don't think that's going to help get us to where we need to go. If we take care of our minds and our spirits, especially during this next phase of history, then at least we can come through this hopefully stronger, more loving human beings. If we worked on our mind and our synapses as much as we worked on our bodies at the gym, I think we would have a very, very different community. And one of the things for me that has always helped me start the day on the right path is a gratitude list. And it could be gratitude for anything big, anything small. It could be that I have fingers and toes, that I have a bed to sleep in, that I have food to eat, that I have wonderful friends to share the show with.
It flips the switch in your head to be like, don't focus on the negative, focus on the positive.
It is literally, they've done brain scans. Neuroscientists have done brain scans with people who practice gratitude, and they've seen the natural dopamine that floods their brain when they are focused on being
grateful.
It's the best
kind of dopamine. It's the natural kind.
Now, I'm not against I'm not against artificial kinds at all. But the best kind and the most authentic kind is the kind we give ourselves. And to me, gratitude is really a shortcut to getting there. When I start the day and it seems like the world's going to end, I have to remember that there are
so
still
write it down.
So many.
What do you do?
Yes,
you write
often
it down.
I write it down.
On paper,
that's a good thing to
tweet it out.
You know, it's like people are always looking for things to talk about on social media. And I'm like, you know, like I've been really getting into Tito Rodriguez's I like it like that. I like it like that. Así me gusta. And I've been playing this song back to back. And it just makes me filled with so much pride to be a Puerto Rican person. And this is the music that really speaks to me. And because it's bilingual, it's an integral whole. It has so many textural goodness in it. And so I shared that on social media, and nobody really cared too much about it, you know?
So let's...
But, when I post something negative, you know, about Trump or the Supreme Court justice, it gets a lot of traction.
Absolutely.
But ultimately, it's not the community that I want to build.
So as someone who works in social media for a living, what do you learn? What's the lesson you get from that?
Well, it's you are the status updates you make. You know, you are what you eat, and if you're eating only... beef and starches and not fruits and vegetables, you're incomplete as a person, and you need to round out your diet and have input from a wide variety of sources, and also create content and put content that is a wide variety of sources so your friends and family and your community can also be well fed.
I totally agree with you about the content you put out into the world. But this is what we've seen in social media, and you said it earlier, and this is true in mainstream media as well. If it bleeds, it leads. If it's negative, people will click. If you scare people, if you make people upset, they'll want to read it and talk about it. If you share something that's really positive or wonderful or beautiful, people often and usually will ignore that. You know, when PrEP came out, I thought that was going to be front page news. And some media was kind of interested in it. But basically, their story was, well, where's the story? Where's the problem? There's no problem. This is great. This is a really good thing. And they're like, well, tell us when something goes wrong, because that we're going to publish. This is media. This is how social media works. You know, and everyone who works in social media knows that when you're competing with 100 other media outlets, if you say something negative or fearful, you will get so many more.
If you have to compete, that's the problem.
Which is one of the things
on my
list.
And it's like people that I know that work in LGBT media, is they're all like, they're all measured in their meeting with their bosses is how many clicks did you get?
Yep.
And I'm like, baby, if you measure it that way, any job, in fact, in the world with metrics that are based on, you know, your job performance and not the content, not the heart, not the spirit of your job, is ultimately going to take you down a pathway where you're going to be very unhappy.
Right. So I have no control over that. I have no control over the toxicity of that dynamic. But what I do get control over is whether I read it and ingest it and how I incorporate that. And I wrote about that in my first book, Absolutely Should List, over 10 years ago, that the media is always going to be skewed towards making you afraid, afraid. So you will be anxious. So you will buy shit you don't really need. That's the way media always works. We don't have to be passive victims of that. We don't have to simply digest that and say, oh, well, that's the way it is. As creators, as you pointed out, yes, you get a chance to change some of that dialogue. And as people, any one of us that want to like get through this time period that we're going through, it's going to be important that we're a little more discerning now about the kind of social media that we digest and how we process it and then how we regurgitate it back out to our followers.
Now, I have to say, being away, you know, for as long as I was away for, it was nice to escape social media for a while. And, of course, the news cycle, this 24-hour news cycle, it was nice to be able to, like, not have to deal with that. But I noticed that I've come back and I'm instantly on my phone. I'm looking at my Facebook. I'm looking at Instagram. I'm looking at these other things. And that, but I'm conscientiously trying to put it down a little bit more. But it's addictive.
Why? What's addictive? What's happening in your brain?
I'm thinking like I'm going to pick it up. I'm going to miss out on something. Maybe something new's happening. Maybe somebody liked something. Maybe I have a new friend request from Norway. What's happening?
Yes. And what does your mind say at those moments? Like, if I'll have a new friend request. There's something going on. I have to know about it because I want to feel what?
I don't know.
Complete? Like your life has meaning? Like you're making progress?
I don't know. I'm curious. I want to know what's happening. Okay. I'm like.
So just to be aware, and for anyone to be aware that when they're doing that in a way that may not always be healthy. And again, I love social media, but sometimes we do use it in an addictive way. So I'd say with any addiction, just be aware of what you are looking for. Yeah. Be mindful about what it is you're doing, why you're doing it, and the state of experience you're truly trying to obtain. A lot of times it's that instant gratification, it's the dopamine, it's the endorphins, it's that rush of like, oh, I have a friend request or something.
Yeah.
Nothing wrong with that, okay? But it can be addictive and it can be unhealthy if we consume really negative, toxic messages at very high levels and not counterbalance that or not balance that.
So I should leave all the drag groups that I belong to on Facebook?
Well, I can't tell you what you should do, Mark.
It's not about what you should do. Right.
But it's about you being mindful about what is healthy for you, and no one else can really tell you that. But you know in your body when you are doing something that's unhealthy, or you're clicking on a site, or you're reading an article that is leaving you with an unhealthy feeling. You know that. You know that intuitively. You know that in your body.
True.
And I think we all have to be more discerning now than we have been.
Damon, I'm curious to hear about your behind-the-scenes work in running one of the more successful prep groups on social media.
Yeah.
The name of the group is...
It's called Prep Facts, Rethinking HIV Prevention and Sex. And it's a long title.
A lot of people go to this group looking for information, just like other forums. And like many successful forums, they've been attacked by individuals, organizations that are trying to control some kind of narrative.
Yeah.
Or work against your very goals, that the reason you started this forum, right? Bette Midler wrote on Twitter, and she's, you know, like Cher, she doesn't have much love for Trump or Republicans. Trump and Putin are meeting in Finland next month. That's a long way to travel for a blowjob. But hey, Putin's got the money.
Oh, people took her to task because she said she was homophobic, right?
Yeah. She also wrote, Justice Kennedy's son worked at Deutsche Bank and got Donald Trump $1 billion in loans when no other bank would lend him a dime. This time, someone else disrobe, and Trump got paid. Woo! So some folks, right-wingers, wrote back, you know, these are right-wingers with no new accounts, with no photos of themselves, proud American mom with a flag, you know, pretty transparent that it's a not
Russian bot.
A Russian bot or a Republican or, you know, somebody who's not who they say they are. Writing, I've never seen so many liberals proudly display their true homophobia on the same time at Twitter, on Twitter, especially during Pride Month. And we conservatives are supposed to be the intolerant ones. Once again, Hollywood is full of hypocrites.
Sorry, that's a conservative calling Bette Midler homophobic. Like Bette Midler, the biggest like gay advocate, or one of the biggest gay advocates in entertainment over the last 60 years.
In history.
So,
and her story.
So what does that tell you? What does this person want? What is the secondary gain that they're trying to get?
Before you answer that question, I'm curious to see how you handle those kind of people coming your way. Because the way I handle it is I just, as soon as I see it, I ban block and you're out of there.
Yeah, I don't reward I don't that behavior that, because they want attention. And I'm not going to give them the attention or the clicks that they want. And that's really the best way to fight some of these people, especially this kind of thing. Cause it's
and what do you think is that they're trying to accomplish by
attention? Attention. I mean, if it's just this conservative...
Create doubt.
If it's a conservative person who is really in favor of 45, they do often use mind techniques to try to get us to hate each other and attack each other. Sure. So it could be just, you know, just the little thing that they're trying to drop into the social media pool so we'll attack each other.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't take the bait.
And part of it is like, you know... I think, like, RuPaul, you know, for all his shortcomings, he's an extremely successful, egalitarian person who wants the world to be a better place, for especially for gender and sexually nonconforming people. Mm-hmm. And yet, we, our own community, and our, even us ourselves, hold RuPaul to impeccable high standards. And I know that he's not, he wouldn't be held to those high standards if he wasn't a gender nonconforming openly proud and unapologetic black gay man.
Oh yeah.
And so, you know, and I noticed this, that like I ran into one of the moderators that created the RuPaul's Drag Race forum on Reddit at IML of all places, mm-hmm. and asked him, do you know who's running that forum now? And he says, absolutely no, we don't know who these people are. And these people took over the forum, were able to take over the forum because they were doing death threats and doxing the original moderators who created this forum. So that forum is full, is a snake pit now of divisive, angry, rotten content that tangentially separates this very powerful community of drag queens and drag fans against each other. And this season on Drag Race has been very disheartening for me because it was creating this false binary of the Vixen versus RuPaul that I felt was not constructive to either of their interests. And ultimately, I felt that was something that they were both being manipulated by outside forces. And to some degree, it's this, you know, snake, this den of vipers that are all over the internet that take over groups like yours.
They're not taking over mine, honey.
But I see it happening all the time.
Try.
And even like LGBT blogs and sites and stuff. Like, I don't know who's running these things. And I see these videos on Facebook that are run by news organizations that use letters. Right. So Conservative Review is a well-known conservative publication, but now they call themselves CRTV. Mm-hmm. And they post all these, like, fighting racism and fighting homophobia. And I'm like, but it's not really fighting racism or homophobia. And you see a ton of those things, and they're all funded by these, like, really huge media conglomerates. And to me, it's like, that's such a disturbing thing, because at this point, I'm getting to feeling like George Orwell's 1984, or The Handmaid's Tale. You just don't know who to trust anymore.
So, if I may, I'd like to respond to
in
kind of a higher, again, I know you hate the word, but let me try to think, philosophical, spiritual framework. This world that we're in is rooted in attack. It always has been. You look at history. You look at anthropology. This world is rooted in attack. The philosophical section of that comes to this idea that if there is another energy or another plane of existence that is more about love, that is more about compassion and cooperation, that is not even recognizing that we're separate, even though we have bodies, but you and I are manifestations of the same loving spiritual energy, then the trick here while we're living in the world of attack is to nurture and foster that love and to bring that to whenever we go onto that next plane. But the world while we're here, while we're doing time on planet Earth, is about attack. If you contribute love into the world, you will be attacked. If you contribute hate into the world, you will be attacked. But that is a challenge and an opportunity for us as well. And this is not based on what's happening on the Supreme Court right now. This goes back as long as civilization has existed. Buddhism is very clear on this. We are valuable, loving, beautiful beings that happen to be occupying human bodies at this moment. And the trick is to remember that and to stay in awareness of that through mindfulness, through meditation, through love, through community, through togetherness, through generosity. That's how we get through this. All of the things you mentioned are true, and they're all manifestations of the same problem. this world is fundamentally based in attack. And it's always been like that. Now, with social media, it's amplified up quite a bit because everybody has access to a keyboard, or everyone who has access to a keyboard and a Wi-Fi connection can perpetuate that attack. Mm. It used to be, you know, when people attacked other people, they had to write letters to the TV stations. Eileen Fulton from As the World Turns talks about how fans used to write her these horrible, horrible letters that were full of attack. And Susan Lucci used to have these horrible letters. But now anybody with a keyboard and a Wi-Fi connection can just do it and have like 1,000 people like
that. Is that you're a big fan of soap operas? So is that part of the reason we don't have soap operas anymore? Because we're sort of like, we want the authenticity of that conflict. We're not satisfied with seeing a dramatization of it. Mm. We want the actual conflict to show.
That's a good question, and it's hard to say because the downfall of the daytime's drama is so much to do with the business more than the creative. Because if you see the aspects of what we see on Netflix and even aspects from season to season of the quote reality shows incorporate aspects of soap opera, which was really incorporating aspects of Shakespeare and Greek drama and Greek tragedy. So I think we've always had a craving culturally for drama, for friction, for conflict, and to see people resolve those conflicts through fictional means. Soap operas provided a really great opportunity.
So the stress is coming from the fact that we don't see the conflict get resolved. And in fact, like you look at, you know, Star Trek Discovery, right, this past season, Mark, we didn't have the conflict be resolved. It was always until next episode, and next episode.
Yeah,
and next
that was
episode.
In some ways it wasn't very fulfilling. You wanted to see something happen, and
you wanted
like,
to see resolution, and it never happens.
Yeah,
or like you know, and that can be good if you have like a long, like it was 15 episodes. So sometimes you have a long arc, but you want to see like smaller things get resolved, and it just never really felt like we're getting anything resolved.
Yeah. So getting back to your point, the world is rooted in attack, and if we don't go along with that step by step, we will be attacked. And you know this from doing the show. RuPaul knows this from his work. I know this from talking about PrEP. Cher knows this. I mean, anyone who stands up for anything that's about love or compassion or generosity gets attacked. I don't like it, but I accept it because I am. It's more important to me to be true to my message regardless of those consequences. Yeah. And I have understood that this world is filled with attack literally from the first day I was born, and I'm 47 now, so I'm used to that. It doesn't really faze me. When people say horrible things to me in the PrepFex group, it doesn't faze me.
When Vixen walked into the workroom on RuPaul's Drag Race and said, "I'm here to fight," you're like, "Business as usual for the planet Earth."
Good for ratings, you know? Right. I mean, they used to have bullfights, right? They used to have guillotines. These used to historically historically, we'd kill people in public. That was socially acceptable.
In Latin American culture, the bullfighter occupied the same cultural space as a drag queen.
Yeah.
And in fact, if you listen to a lot of old bullfighter songs from the 40s, 50s, and 60s, you could swap out bullfighter with drag queen, and it's... they're basically the same songs, you know. I have to be the best and forget about the rest. I'm going to slay them all on the fields and be triumphant because I am the queen and I will slay my enemies with my gallant moves, my beautiful gowns, and my dazzling powers. That's basically a translation of, "Yo quiero ser el mejor y lo tengo que ser con estilo y valor," which means I have to be the best, and I'm only going to succeed by doing that with style and courage.
I love that. It's so beautiful the way you say it.
You have on your list here, don't give away your emotional agency.
Yes.
How do you keep
what does that mean?
In control of your own emotional agency? How do you not give it away? Because, you know, we're on social media. We're under this terrible president. People are attacking us all the time.
So this is a Buddhist saying that really comes in handy for me a lot. And the saying goes, pain is inevitable, suffering is optional. Pain is what we experience as loving people when the people in the communities around us suffer. And that's natural and that's human. And your ability to feel pain is directly proportional to your ability to feel love. So we want to have reverence for that. There's nothing wrong with that. It doesn't feel good, but that is a human part of being alive and contributing energy into this world. Suffering is optional. And suffering is what we do in our minds, how we make meaning of the pain. To say, this shouldn't be happening. This is terrible. This is wrong. The world is ending. Everything's terrible. My life is terrible. I hate everybody. And then going on social media and attacking other people with all that shit. That is the kind of suffering that creates more suffering. And that is where we get a vote. That is where we get a say in it. I'm not saying I'm perfect at this. This is a process for me, too.
Right.
But I'm saying that this is the process that I'm actively working in, that I have been working in, actively in, and I anticipate for the rest of my life now with the Supreme Court. I cannot look to the world. I cannot look to America. I cannot look to the Supreme Court as the source of my serenity or my happiness or my joy. It's going to have to continue to be an inside job. And so the pain that I will be experiencing, the pain I think we will be experiencing over the next 2 or 3 decades is real. But we want to respect and honor that. I will not give away, just like Viktor Frankl, Tina Turner, Nelson Mandela, I will not give these people away the power to control how I feel 24/7.
So you just have to figure out what your bliss is and then and concentrate on that.
Find the bliss and nurture that energy and that love within and find ways to authentically express that. You know, seeing the Cher show with the two of you for me was a really joyful moment. And that was an example
for me. For me too.
Well, and that's like one of the things I'm really mindful about is showing love and appreciation for the two of you, for people I respect, and doing things that are really like nurturing and fun for me. And that was really nurturing and fun.
I'm so used to being like robbed, disappointed, and hurt by corporate large-scale musical theater or Broadway productions, and it was so refreshing to see something so good and so uplifting and fun as the Cher show musical was.
And when we went to the beach before the show that day, it was this beautiful day here in Chicago. I've been here before, but I've never been when the weather's been decent before. So just being on the beach that day, in spite of everything happening in the world.
Not just any beach, the gay beach.
The gay beach, yes.
Hollywood. How many people do you think? There was over 1,000 gay men.
There were like 1,000 people. And when you looked around, what did you see? Aside from the beautiful bodies, what did you see?
The water. The water. The sand, the buildings, the trees.
Yeah, me too. I was very aware of that. I was very aware of the laughter and the smiles and the fun and the kissing. It was just such a joyful environment.
And it was.
And that's nurturing for me.
And the beautiful bodies and of all body types. Because I know a lot of people that are like, oh, I don't want to go to the beach. I'm too skinny. I'm too fat. I'm too this. I'm too that. I'm like, listen, everybody's there. You know?
No, when I say beautiful bodies are people who know me, so let me clarify. I'm generally all about the Bears and who I would say the beautiful bodies of the Eagle on a Saturday night. I mean, but it was diverse. It was ethnically diverse. It was diverse by age, by body shape,
by race.
That's
why Chicago's wonderful.
I really love that. It was all these men and some women just being there, being together, and being joyful. And it doesn't mean the world's perfect, and it doesn't mean that there's not bad shit going down. It means at that moment, we chose to be together and share this really great energy together. And sometimes that's just being in the moment. That's healthy right there. Healthier than scrolling through Facebook and thinking about ways to make people wrong.
And this is was also the first time I had been in public with the scars from my cancer surgery.
I didn't realize that.
Yeah, and so to me, it was always like, you know, I guess in some ways I do rely on my body. I do rely on my appearance for my own self-esteem and acknowledging that in shortcoming of myself and being in a situation where it still doesn't matter. It's okay. That's, you know. In fact, most people are like, oh, is that a scar from cancer? I thought that was a tattoo or something. You know, people dismissing it or trying to discard my emotional baggage from the scar. I don't know. To me, it was like empowering to be able to be out in public and just stand there and people sort of gawking at that huge scar on my shoulder and being like, it's not that big of a deal.
It's not that big of a deal.
I love that. I probably wouldn't have even noticed it if you hadn't reminded me.
But to me, it feels like a football. It feels enormous, you know?
Right.
Literally carrying it on my shoulders.
We'll get a nice little tattoo to cover that up.
I don't want a tattoo. I just want to let it be. I'm not like Kavi Vida. I don't want to tattoo my scars into rainbows.
And did
just
you,
let them be.
Did you think anyone judged you or noticed it or judged
I do know,
you
I do
negatively?
See some people look at it and go, ugh, what's that?
No.
Are you sure?
I've actually had people do that, And so it's nice to mostly be in an environment that's very body positive and for a gay beach, you know.
Yeah. So nurturing experiences like that, whatever that means, that's something that I really want people to be mindful and aware of. It could be going to the beach. It could be going to the park. It could be just enjoying time with someone you care about. but just doing something that's about nurturing your spirit.
I noticed on your list you put mindful drug use.
Yeah.
All right, baby.
Because you're a person that doesn't say no to much.
So I talked about, you know, the natural endorphins, which are great, and the natural dopamine. We want to know how to access that within ourselves. I happen to think there's nothing wrong or less than or pathological about accessing the chemical states that are available to us as well. Hmm. And so alcohol.
Have you really looked at your hands?
Is one of them. Yeah.
I mean, have you ever really, really looked at your hands?
Yes.
I think so.
What were you saying?
But there's other...
That's a drug trope.
Okay. Do you not know that?
He doesn't even realize that.
He says mindful drug use. You are so square.
I'm square.
You've never done anything.
Look, I think caffeine's a drug. Nicotine is a drug. These are all mind-altering drugs. Now caffeine is socially acceptable. I talk about harm reduction with nicotine. That's a mind-altering drug. But there's also studies going on right now that are looking at the therapeutic properties of certain drugs like
MDMA.
Well, MDMA has been studied before, and there's definitely antidepressant qualities. Also, ketamine is a drug that's being studied right now. We refer to in the community
Special K.
The other one is psilocybin. I think I'm saying that right. It's basically like mushrooms at NYU. There's been a lot of studies about how psilocybin, forgive me if I'm not saying that right, affects people who are living with cancer, who have been suffering from depression.
And what does that mark you say about marijuana therapy for cancer? It doesn't cure your cancer. You won't give a fuck that you have cancer.
That's one.
I don't think using drugs is about not giving a fuck, but it's about letting go of attachment to certain mental states that cause us suffering. Not letting go of the pain, but using drugs to help you let go of the suffering so that we are more able to do that authentically without the drug. Mm-hmm. That's how I see drugs as being helpful.
And don't beat yourself up for having done the drugs.
Absolutely not. Drugs can be a means to an end. Yeah. It's when we see them as an end to themselves that we get in trouble with the addiction issues. And that's what I've been seeing, the 20
All
years
right,
I've
been baby. Read books.
Read books.
Read houses.
T.S. Madison says, read good books and bad people.
Does she really say that? That's hysterical.
So instead of scrolling through Facebook and Twitter and looking how everybody's doing everything wrong, and again, I'm not saying I'm perfect at this, or instead of spending hours and hours on CSNBC or CNN.
Get a library card.
Get a card. Or, you know, we live in the digital age. It's so easy to download information that was inaccessible for decades, for most of our lives when we were growing up. Read Man's Search for Meaning. Read Nelson Mandela's Long Walk to Freedom. Read Tina Turner's I, Tina. There's so many stories of people.
That's a good book for most drag queens who are listening to this right now. Pick up yourself a copy of I, Tina. It's not about crystal meth.
Let's do a big club.
It is about the great entertainer Tina Turner, who's now a Swiss resident.
That's right. She's happily married and in her 70s in the Swiss Alps.
She's like, which chocolatier will I go to today?
And one book that I've really loved recently came out a few months before the election. It's called The Book of Joy, and it's written by the Dalai Lama with Archbishop Desmond Tutu, and it's really down to earth. You don't have to have a spiritual background to understand it. It's just really well written. It's based on a talk that they gave, and it's just very practical, logistical advice for getting through adversity in your life. It's called The Book of Joy, and it's out there. I found it in an airport. That's the good news that I focus on, is that sort of these ancient spiritual truths that were really held in echelons of privilege for so many centuries are now available at the airport. You can buy a book and simply get these truths anywhere at any time. That, to me, is a wonderful age to be living in.
This reminds me a lot of a really good book is Kate Bornstein's Hello, Cruel World. Which is very similar to this list. And we'll post this list on our website, feastoffun.com, which you have so much stuff. Let's kind of go a little bit faster here. Find the good news. Thank people.
Yes. So gratitude, I started with gratitude for ourselves, but I also find saying thank you to people helps me to feel healthy. It helps me to feel in touch with that loving energy that's inside me.
It's not only making them feel good, it's making you feel good when you thank somebody, because you feel like, you know, you did something and that part's closed and we can work on something else now.
Yes.
You know?
I do feel bad sometimes, like I thank coworkers or friends, and I notice that they're so much quietly struggling with their own burdens that they're not able to hear me. And it was kind of reminding me of Mr. Rogers with Francois Clemens, the gay man who was, he says, it's like, I love you just the way you are. And Francois turned to Mr. Rogers and said, is a man telling me he loves me? He's like, are you talking to me, Mr. Rogers? He's like, I've been talking to you all along. It's just today is the day you hurt me.
I love that. That's actually a very spiritual message.
I guess he got that from Christianity. I think that's probably the most one of the most powerful moments of that movement. Yeah. Of the whole
I've reached out to Francois Clemens.
He said, fuck off, Fausto.
I want to get him on the show.
I want another man to tell me he loves me.
He's such a character. Mm-hmm. I love that he grew up to be this big old fairy, robe-wearing, turquoise jewelry, spiritual, sassy gay man who just doesn't give a fuck mm-hmm. about anything.
So we know that when we say thank you, authentically thank you, mm-hmm. that it changes the synapses in the brain. And there's a book, another book I'd recommend people read called How God Changes the Brain, which is not about God, but it's written by neuroscientists who studied brain waves when they had people do gratitude exercises and meditation over a consistent period of time. Mm-hmm. How they saw people's brains change. That when we say an authentic thank you of gratitude to people we care about, respect, or love, it changes the way we feel. It is inherently healthy for us. And it is the opposite of attackivism in this crazy world.
Forgive yourself.
Forgive yourself.
You know, that's one thing I'm doing. People are like, what are you doing in the gym? What do you do? And I was like, to me, it's like, you know, for most of my life, like bodybuilding or weightlifting or muscle building has always been about like pushing yourself to that next level. And after the cancer, I certainly like not been able to do that. And so it's all about like just keeping what I got, mm-hmm. holding on for dear life. And that's been a very healing way of looking at weightlifting and bodybuilding is, you know, just staying where you are can also be an accomplishment. Mm-hmm. It's not this idea that you always have to improve upon the last year. I think as a capitalist Western mindset, we're always looking at our money. We're looking at our Twitter followers or our income from work. And everything has to be like a little bit bigger than last year.
And it's that. And to me, forgiveness is also forgiving ourselves for the way we're feeling right now. And what I mean by that is that I know some people that are really struggling with intense hatred right now for 45. People who are older adults who have never actually felt hatred and wished violent, agonizing death on people before and are very surprised that they're having these feelings now and are struggling with those feelings. I'm like, so not only are you experiencing hateful feelings towards 45, but you're also giving yourself a shit because you're having these feelings. Mm-hmm. Why not just let yourself have the feelings, but learn from them? Try to understand what's happening instead of condemning yourself or shooting yourself mm-hmm. for feeling the way you feel.
What do you think is going to happen if we actually get what we want and Trump is found guilty of all these crimes, is not only just, you know, sentenced to prison, but may actually get, you know, the death penalty.
Oh, I don't. I mean,
if that happened, would that be?
He's not even going to go to jail. He'll die before
I'm saying
that happens.
If that happened, if that happened, would that be a desirable outcome?
Politically.
And I'm asking the question because I don't think it is.
Politically,
as evil as a man is,
politically, that would not. I mean, I sure wouldn't argue with that outcome. It wouldn't solve the problem. I see 45 as the symptom of a greater problem. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So even if he died tomorrow, we still have the problem. You described the
we
problem
still
earlier:
have us.
The hate, the attackivism on both the left and the right, the lack of compassion
we
and generosity on both sides.
We need to stop talking about left and right.
Okay,
there.
You're right. You're
take
right.
that.
You're right. You're right.
You should list, Mr. Should list.
Well, I'm saying because that's
this
how they
is
see
this
themselves.
Binary. But they, do you need just because they're defining the rules of the game? Doesn't mean you have to play it.
Good point, Fausto. So people of all political orientations. Yeah. Is that better?
Yeah. How many times do I have to tell people, stop using the terms politically correct, stop using the terms left and right, because that all this stuff is they define that for
so
you.
So intolerance.
They're controlling your mind
right
now.
I'm with you. So intolerance and attackivism will not go away tomorrow if Trump drops dead. So I think
as much as we would like to see that happen.
But here's the thing. Yeah. I also think that if we had a really amazing shift in this country towards love and we had a president that was about honor, respect and compassion and love and generosity. And we had that for 8 years. I'm not sure people would feel that much closer to serenity and joy. And I say that because of the last 8 years we had under Obama, which was generally an administration that generally, not always, but generally prioritized human rights, compassion, sure. gay rights, women's rights, trans rights, racial equality. we still had people attacking each other on all sides of the political spectrum, or we still had people being impatient and ungenerous with each other during those times and getting depressed and anxious because of that.
So what is, in terms of, you know, encouraging behavior that we'd like to see in others when you have a grievance?
So
what is an effective way to deal with that and to communicate that to somebody you want to hear you?
So are we talking in an interpersonal relationship,
sure,
or in a political way?
Both.
Okay. Because I think politically, I think what's happening a lot in our country beautifully is that we're seeing a lot of people, especially young people, being galvanized and active now in a way that they had not really considered before, realizing that their voices do matter, especially the young people in Florida. I think what they're doing is beautiful. And I see a lot of their work.
You're talking about the Parkland High School students,
how they're standing up to the NRA, how they're holding community forums. I think the way they speak is so eloquent and love-based. And I think that is a direction politically that I would like to see us all follow. Mm. In interpersonal relationships, Fausto, being peaceful is not about lying down and taking it and just accepting everything. But it's
as hot as that sounds.
But it is, and I talk, shameless plug for Rational Relating, my second book, The Smart Way to Stay Sane in the Crazy World of Love.
All very good books.
I walk through the steps of walking through differences, but in a way that's about compassion, in a way that's about integrity,
right,
in a way that really honors both people. Mm-hmm. And recognizing that two people can see a situation differently and neither one necessarily have to be right or wrong. But if we get into that dichotomy, that's where we get into a lot of trouble.
Even though more often than not, one of the people is more right than the other
person. Well, right, Mark. You're always, we know you're always right. So.
I'm not always right. I get it wrong.
And, you know, certainly like politicians like Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. She's the new darling. Hopefully she's become a first female president. The young folks are socialists. They're all socialists. They're all gender nonconforming, and for the vast, vast majority of them. And it's interesting to see how this generation will grow. That's why I'm able to wake up tomorrow and do stuff. It's just because I do interact with a lot of young people doing the show and being out and about. And they
Hope.
They are my hope. You are part of my community, and I am part of yours, and that's why I'm able to
discount the old people too. It's like I know a lot of people that are old, and they're very liberal too, and there's a lot of people that have put in a lot of years fighting for what we have now.
Well, what I really appreciate is I'm starting to see more young people do what I was doing when I was their age, which is inviting people who are over 40, over 50, over 60 to participate in their events, in their drag shows, in their political organizations. And this idea of having age diversity in whatever you do, if your circle of friends all are the same age as you, you're not doing it right. You gotta be like a college and a high school and an elementary school. You have to be friends with people of all ages, because your life, your future, your happiness, your joy depends on it.
And talking,
paint with all the crayons, baby.
And reaching out and talking with people. Yeah. I often see that kind of ageism. Because I'm 47, and I often see and hear it more from the 40 and 50 above group about this young group of people, and they use words like millennials to stigmatize an entire generation of people who I think are kicking ass, who I think are amazing.
But millennials is all the right-wing term.
Maybe that's one of those right-wing terms that they've used to stigmatize and make us feel like we're divided instead of connected. And again, I really believe that the way through this with serenity, with joy, is going to be recognizing that we have more in common than we do separate.
That thread that binds us all together.
Absolutely.
We're a wonderful gay tapestry here.
Help us do more art, make more content like this podcast. Consider making a one-time donation to Feast of Fun. I know you guys have listened to this podcast for years and years and years, and you've always relied on somebody else doing that. Mm-hmm. Now is your chance to actually step up. Step your pussy up and make a one-time donation at feastoffun.com/donate. Or consider becoming a member.
You can do that at feastoffun.com/plus, because your contribution to the show is what makes this show happen. We wouldn't be able to have Damon on if it weren't for people just like you. And Damon, how many times have you been on the podcast? It's over 10, right?
I think this is the 8 or 9th time.
Really?
It's probably been. It's about once a year for the past 10 years.
Yeah,
so. I really want to appeal to people listening to this too, because we're talking about gratitude, we're talking about generosity, and there's ways to do that. But money is one of the ways of this world that people can show thank you. And it does matter to say thank you in an email, to say you guys are wonderful and you've helped me so much. And I know you guys get that feedback.
Yeah, and people do.
But money is, at this time in this world, an important way too. And you are presenting a message to the world that is different from the clickbait, fear-based hate attackivism that's so common out there. You're presenting dialogues and conversations that try to change the world. And people can support that by supporting you doing this. And you ask so very little for what you put out in return.
If I had to do, if I had to work for one of these media groups that made me make this kind of content, I would give up. I wouldn't do it.
Yeah. You have principles. This is not, you have integrity.
Well, it's just I would be miserable. I would, and to my heart goes out because some of the guests that have come on the show do work for those organizations. And I see the stress that they put them, that they are under, either through other decision or through somebody else's decision. But it's not a place that I would wish on my worst enemy. And so hopefully this podcast can be a little bit of a sanctuary for people who are under that pressure so they can feel heard and understood. And some of our best guests, best moments in their careers have been on this program.
And especially with what's ahead of us historically, we need voices that are rational, compassionate, loving, humane. And you two have always been that, and you continue to be that. And we need to, I feel like it's really important with our integrity to support the voices of people who are standing up and resisting the oppressive forces that are coming about, and not just going on with
regardless of political background that they.
So please support the show.
You notice that I said that.
Yes, political. Yes, and thank you, Fausto, because you've just. I want to thank you because you've just really made me rethink the way I have been describing this divide in terms of left and right, and I'm definitely going to think about that more because I hadn't even really thought about that.
Mr. Rogers was a Republican, and he was attacked by his own political party in the last years of his life for simply sending the message that because you're a human being, because you're a person, you are worthy of love.
Yeah.
You do not need to do anything extraordinary to be receiving and giving love. And if we can leave you guys with anything, I hope that I can echo that beautiful message that made me cry so hard when we're seeing Won't You Be My Neighbor in the theaters. It's out now, right now. Definitely check it out. Mark, it's so good to have you back home.
I'm glad to be back home. I'm glad to see you, too. I'm glad you came all the way from New York to come see the Cher Show and do a couple podcasts with us.
Of course.
I'm grateful, Fausto, for keeping the home fires burning.
And honey, they better
keep it burning some more.
I was like,
you need some antibiotics.
I know,
they're burning
you slacked
so much.
Off a lot, but that's okay. I forgive you.
I was juggling 100 plates.
I know. It's
the
rough.
People I work with, like, are you okay? And I'm like, no, but I'll be okay. You know, it was hard, and it was, you know, Jesse was definitely, you know, he, our sweet little dog, he was definitely missing his daddy.
Yeah, he was.
And like any child who's missing their parents, he was sometimes acting out. But, you know, I was pretty good about keeping him out of trouble and keeping him out of fights with other dogs. But he was ready to fight. His wig was on too tight.
He was in pain, and he was into attackivism.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And now he's even back to dog. Being loved, and he just wants to fuck everybody again.
Well, you know, hump.
Yeah, hump everybody.
So,
Damon, thank you.
Thank
Have a
you
safe
guys.
Trip back to New York City.
Oh, I'm on prep, so it's very safe. Thank
Bye, everybody.
Bye. That was funny.